Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Beltway Blitz coming up in just a moment on G&D. Welcome back. You're locked into the Fan. It is time to give away some tickets. We've been telling you we got a four-pack. Old Glory DC rugby tickets could be yours. So right now, caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067. Congrats. You are winning a four-pack of tickets to the Old Glory DC rugby battle. They got the Houston Sabercats on the schedule Saturday night, May 21st. Should say Saturday afternoon. A game, I believe, starts at 1 p.m. Segra Field in Leesburg. Learn more. Score your tickets. OldGloryDC.com. This is a really fun time. They got music, taps are flowing, fast-paced, hard-hitting rugby action for the whole family. Really, really cool. So congrats to whoever is about to win those tickets. We've got two more pairs we'll be giving away on the show tomorrow. Chris Miles, Michael Phillips, Andrew Golden coming up on the Beltway Blitz. Danny, you just saw something we're going to get into in the 5 o'clock hour at 5:25. Tell people real quick, again, this is about an hour and 20 minutes away, what we're going to be doing.
Emory University Business School. So it's not like Billy the Blogger. It's not like some dude with an opinion. They've got some data analytics, and they released their 2022 NFL fandom rankings, right? Where they consider all sorts of things like television ratings, brand equity, and they put, you know, they try to put data and document points onto things to sort of quantify where teams are, organizations are. Teams at the top, where you'd expect. Green Bay, great fan equity. New England, dead last. 32nd out of 32, your Washington Commanders.
I'm not buying it. I'm going to want to double click on some information when we get into that. I'm going to probably push back a little bit on that as well. Easy target right now. Easy punching bag, obviously, the Commanders. But I'm not necessarily buying the idea that if you're ranking fan bases, this is one of the bottom. I mean, this whole town has been crazed for the then Redskins for years and years and years. Now, if you want me to be as candid as I can, I think that we are at a rock bottom of support and interest and passion that we've probably ever been, and I think changing the name didn't help that. A lot of people didn't want the name changed. The team didn't want to change it either. They just kind of had to. But we'll get into that coming up next hour on G&D. We've actually got a Commanders player top of the hour, 5 o'clock, 53 minutes from now to go through the schedule with us, so don't miss that. But let's get started on the Beltway Blitz. Speaking of which, talking NBA playoffs and the Nats as the blitz continues. Michael Phillips, Richmond Times-Dispatch. What do you make of that? I mean, there is a study that was done saying that they ranked 32 fan bases.
And the Commanders are dead last.
Commanders last. Do you think they're in some trouble with the fan base right now?
I looked at that, and I saw the guy who put that out had like 12 Twitter followers. So I'm excited he could get some airtime out of riling people up. Like, dude, I've been to Jacksonville for a game. Things aren't great here. I'm not going to represent that things are great here. But there are still actual fans. They're still ahead of the Chargers and Jaguars.
Danny, you're claiming it was kind of done as a research project.
Yeah, this is an academic exercise from an Emory University business school. I'm not sure the guy is. What do the kids say? Clout chasing? Did I use that properly, Michael? I don't know.
you did. Let me just tweak it. You can tell me that the Commanders have the saltiest fan base or like the most peeved fan base, but to me, the wording suggests they don't have a fan base. I don't think that's true. I think people are listening to the show who are Commanders fans. I hear from people all the time, I'm not going to the games. I'm not spending my money. But look, that's my team. I grew up with them. I'm following them. I think there are fans. You could sell me, though, this is the fan base that is the most unhappy with the way their team is run and the way things are going.
I buy that. You are our stadium consultant. Update us. What's the latest here? Virginia is, I guess, there's a limit on some legislative session. What's going on? What's the latest? Where does it stand?
The clock's ticking again towards the deadline here. So on July 1st, the new year starts in Virginia, the fiscal year. Happy fiscal new year coming up here to you guys, obviously. We'll celebrate with all the traditional accompaniments. But they still don't have a budget. This is the thing that is traditionally done in late March. You know, we were hyping people up towards that. Hey, it's March. You know, they're going to decide about the budget. This will include however much money for the Commander Stadium. They've been fighting. It's a thing politicians do. And now we're rapidly approaching the deadline. If they don't get this thing done by July 1st, we're in that, like, government shutdown territory that, you know, I don't know how a state shuts down, but everybody's kind of, you know, getting a little antsy at this point about how this is going to end up. So resolution could come any day now, or this thing could just kind of get caught up in the chaos of the rest of the government.
Michael, I'm going to give you a take. You tell me if it's crazy or not. They're ending up out in the Dulles, Ashburn, Leesburg, whatever that is, area, and all this other stuff is just noise, and I think it's kind of been that way for a long time. Tag, you're it.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in that. I have always held that to be true. I do believe that in the end, this thing gets built in Virginia, and when it gets built in Virginia, that is the most logical place. It has access to all the corporate money. It has access to the Dulles Airport. It's near where they are now. It's near a very wealthy population that can afford to spend money on big events. It's on the metro line. I think that's where this thing ends up. I think they're trying for RFK. It's just not going to happen. So yes, I fully agree with you. The one thing that I keep coming back to is, you know, Virginia's first number was $1 billion, and that's a lot of money. And what we're hearing is this thing could cross the finish line at $350 million, and it's still a lot of money, but that's a big difference in the check Dan's cutting to get this project started. If it's $1 billion, that's the money to get this thing off the ground. You're just kind of making incremental payments on it. At $350 million, he's got to cut a pretty big check to get dirt moved. And that could be a complicating factor here. So, you know, the thing we keep coming back to is Virginia bidding against themselves? And I think the answer is yes, they are. But I also think it's fair to ask, does Dan have the $650 million to bridge the gap if that's what it's going to take to put a shovel on the ground?
Do you think they'll sign anybody else of consequence? I don't mean like an undrafted free agent that was here for 24 hours or a former, you know, Panther that's may or may not make the team. I mean, will they sign anybody else that's going to be impactful for them?
Well, they're playing the Panthers in preseason, so I'm very excited to see who they just like poach same day.
Indeed.
Like, I'd love a mid-game signing. Dude just like switches jerseys, runs over to Ron's side like mid-game.
Red Rover, send three guys you're about to cut right over.
You know, reading between Ron's lines, he's not even subtle about this. He wants a veteran middle linebacker. Like, he's been very clear about this the whole time. Now, a skeptic would point out there have been veteran middle linebackers available. They did not sign. But that's what he wants. He wants a veteran middle linebacker. There are still some out there. I have to believe that this offseason ends with him signing one. I just think he wants it too badly to not go get it eventually.
Yeah, and those guys are not that expensive either. I mean, it would be malpractice at some point along the way not to just grab one of them on the cheap. Michael, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you. Good talking to you, sir.
Take care, guys.
See you, dude.
Be well. Let's talk a little hoops. Danny, you and I will do that for a moment. The Warriors blew out the Mavericks 112-87 last night. Golden State takes game one in the Western Conference Final, and they did it behind the usual suspects. Steph Curry, efficient, 7 of 16 from the floor, hit 3 threes, scored 21 points, dished out 10 assists to go along with his 12 rebounds. And then you had Klay Thompson, who was 7 of 13 last night, only hit 1 3, wasn't really shooting a whole lot from behind the arc. He only played 34 minutes because it was a lot of garbage time last evening late.
Jordan Poole, man, I just want one of these. I want one of these things where nobody considers the guy worth the damn, or nobody knows where he came from, and all of a sudden he turns into a stud for a first division championship caliber team. He was awesome. He was a huge difference maker for them. 8 of 12 from the field, his 19 points, efficient game, only turned it over one time. They needed some of his buckets.
I thought the difference in the game was how well they played Luka defensively.
Agreed.
No one has stopped him, let alone slowed him down. First time in his playoff career, and he's been so good in the playoffs. More turnovers, 7, than field goals, 6. Scored just 20 points, missed 7 of 10 threes. Luka was a minus 30 last night.
You got to hound him. You got to make it miserable. I think our guest Ryan McDonough phrased it really, really well. If he's going to bring the ball up and initiate the offense and ultimately create either for himself or for others, then pick him up, you know, three-quarter court, full court, whatever. Just make it uncomfortable for him as often as possible. And it's one of those things where, you know, guys can kind of take turns, do it hockey shift style. He's so good. He's going to play better as the series progresses. He's not going 6-for-18, you know, many more times and are turning it over more times than he makes baskets. But they did a really good job on him last night. You're right.
If you want smart analysis on that game one, game two, by the way, will be Friday night in Golden State, or a preview on the Celtics and the Heat from a guy in the know. You mentioned Ryan McDonough was on the show. That podcast will be available shortly, thefandc.com, grantanddanny.com/audio if you want to hear that. Speaking of things we watched last night, the Nats finally got a win. Let's talk some baseball. The Nats got a rare win last night against the Marlins. Andrew Golden covers the team for the Washington Post, joins us now. Let's start with the starting pitcher last night, Josiah Gray, who was fantastic. 15 swings and misses with his slider, had 18 swings and misses in the game, 6 innings, 3 runs, another quality start. What'd you think of his outing?
Yeah, I thought he was really effective, especially with that slider, like you said, against a very righty lineup that he was facing against the Marlins, really using that slider down in the zone. He was effective with it. And I think it's just an example of who he can be when he can really utilize his off-speed pitches and keep them in and out of the zone and setting up other pitches. So I think he looked really great last night. And, you know, aside from that one outing, you know, against the Astros, that first inning, I mean, he looked really solid in these past couple of games. So wasn't super surprising at all, but definitely the slider was super effective yesterday.
What's his next step in terms of growth? I always wonder, the hitters, they see guys, they get books on them, and they kind of figure some things out, and they adjust, and, you know, it might be tougher the second, third, fourth time he goes around the league. What do you think his next step for growth is? Because he's obviously been good out of the gate here. The game is not too big for him, but you could still see some upside there. What do you think?
Yeah, I think for any young pitcher, I think it's always, you know, especially when guys have the stuff like, you know, Josiah had, I think the thing you have to work on is how do you adjust to guys the second and third time through the order? You know, mixing up your pitches, starting differently and approaching a batter differently than how you did before. I think, you know, learning how to mix in those off-speed pitches earlier in counts, to start a batter off, step throwing a fastball, you know, because, you know, a lot of MLB hitters, they can screw up a fastball early to count if, you know, you give it to them in that situation. So I think the second and third times of the order is finding ways to be more effective while utilizing your secondary pitches. I think that's where you'll see the next big step for him.
Why is Tanner Rainey the unquestioned closer? I didn't realize this until last night, but Victor Arano's got like the same number of career saves close to Tanner Rainey, and he's pretty much every bit as effective. I'm not saying that he should be the closer, but it seems like it's just Rainey's job and no one asks any questions as if he's Trevor Hoffman. I don't really get that.
Yeah, I think Tanner Rainey, I think he's, you know, he struggled in recent games, and I think it's just been a result of maybe him not having as many opportunities to kind of pitch throughout, you know, to kind of get into a rhythm. I think his stuff when it's on, his high velocity fastball, his ability to throw his other pitches, I think can be really effective. I just think for him, it's just been a matter of not really being as effective in the strike zone and getting behind in counts. But I think he is their guy. He does kind of have the model of what a modern-day closer looks like. I think, it's just being more effective in the strike zone and, you know, not letting guys get ahead early in counts.
Why are they this bad on defense? I didn't expect them to be, you know, gold gloves at every position. If you employ Mikel Franco or Alcides Escobar, you know, you don't have studs there in terms of their defensive acumen. But early on, the first week of the season, they were throwing runners out at home, it seemed like every other game. Now they're right at the top of the major league in errors. What's going on here, Andrew?
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure. I don't know if it's, it could be a lack of, you know, just a lack of focus. But I just think like it's very uncharacteristic of some of these guys, like you mentioned. I can't put a finger on it, but some of it's just like not fundamentals. You know, setting your feet. I mean, Dave Martinez, a couple weeks ago, Dave, he called some of the plays kind of lazy errors where guys just didn't set their feet and get ready to throw, or, you know, just not high baseball IQ plays, overthrowing cutoff men like we saw with Victor Robles last night. In one of our columnists, Barry Sralugo, he wrote a column, you know, earlier today about the defensive struggles, and I think it kind of touches on a lot of the issues, just kind of uncharacteristic and lazy plays.
Andrew Golden, Washington Post, Beltway Blitz on the Nationals. A lot has been made about Juan Soto as a trade chip since a Buster-only story yesterday where a rival executive said to him, if the Nats can't re-sign him, it's not a matter of if they'll trade him, but when, and basically that they should be fielding calls. look, we all get that it's going to be hard to sign this guy, and we also get that he's probably not being traded anytime soon because they're trying to sell. But this is a real conversation. I think people that are dismissive of this are fooling themselves. If you are not going to lock him up, then the best thing to do would be ultimately to move him, and that doesn't mean right now. But I just want to get your take on this. This is dominated MLB Network. I looked up today in a place with a bunch of TVs, and like three of the different networks were talking about this. This is a real thing.
Yeah, but you know, I still think that you know there's a lot of things left to be decided, especially with the learners exploring the possibility of you know of them selling the team. I think there's still a lot of questions to be answered about that. So I don't want to speculate or give a jump to a decision on what I think is going to happen with Soto. I think we have to see that, how it plays out, and I think we'll see how kind of things go with the you know with the ownership and with. Some of the other guys who recently ended their contracts, we talked about yesterday, you know, Jesse obviously talked about how, you know, Dave Martinez and Mike Rizzo are on the last guaranteed year of their contracts. I think there's still a lot of things to kind of be resolved. I think Soto's kind of in there too, but I think there's just kind of too much up in the air right now to kind of make a set or firm decision.
Andrew, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate the time.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks so much.
That is Andrew Golden on the Nats, and that is your Beltway Blitz. Next on Grant and Danny. One of the leading organizations at putting together tournaments in one of the sports youth programs in the country is getting rid of the rankings that it has done for a long time to help organize those tournaments because they feel like it's not good for youth sports to have team rankings anymore. We're going to get into that and whether or not ranking teams at the youth level is part of the problem. Next on Grant and Danny.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
In a half hour, we'll be joined by one of the Commanders to go through their schedule, try to find some keys to victory, some of the more pressing challenges of the season. Always good if you can get a player to help you work through the sked. So we'll do that on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Got a chance to broaden the horizons a bit here and go a little bigger picture, though. We saw this. We thought this was interesting. So I got this from Axios, Danny. You and I were bouncing this around before the show. There's a lot of ways we can go with this. But this is not just specific to the youth hockey organization that I'm about to bring up. This is the type of thing that is being debated in sports at the youth level all over the country right now. And there are other organizations with other sports that are doing something similar. My Hockey Rankings is apparently this website that youth hockey teams all over the nation use. It's going to stop a long-held practice for 11 and under teams in an attempt to be part of the solution in a hyper-competitive world of youth sports. So they apparently are this website, this organization. The site is where they post their rankings, where they put together these rankings of the teams that are really, really good because they hold these tournaments. I found 18 locations around the country, including Washington, D.C., on this website where you can sign up for these tournaments and be a part of what they have going, right? you use the intel that they put together to schedule your games and to be involved in these tournaments because they have these rankings. And apparently, I've never heard of this until this week, but it gives you this idea of, okay, my team is whatever my team is. I don't want to get beat 23-2 in a hockey game. So I want to make sure I'm not playing one of the super elite teams. So they use these rankings for scheduling purposes. What they've been saying is, quote, youth sports have become a rat race to the top amongst parents, coaches, and clubs. I think you would agree. We can 100% all agree with that. It's sad at times.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest. Rankings are a contributing factor, writes the website founder Neil Lowden. There is this, if you aren't keeping up with the Joneses, do you even love your kid mentality out there? The youth hockey community isn't immune. Rather than contributing to the problem, we want My Hockey Rankings platform to be part of the solution, end quote. So they're trying to get rid of these rankings, and they're saying this is not good for anybody because kids are seeing these, and they're saying I'm not on the best team or I'm not the best player, whatever it is. So for context, My Hockey Rankings gathers and crunches data for thousands of North American hockey teams, ages 9 to 18, then ranks them on a weekly basis using some algorithm. The rankings, according to Axios, are indispensable as a resource for coaches, as I was mentioning, tournament directors as well, who use them for scheduling to evenly match the games as best as possible to get a sense for where teams stand so that they can properly slot them in against other opponents. Critics of the rankings, though, say that the rankings have a detrimental effect, that they are culturally awful for youth hockey, that they emphasize winning over player development at way too early an age. Again, we're talking about 9, 10, 11-year-olds at the young end of the spectrum of these rankings. Quote, this will hopefully relieve some of the pressure a bit, Ken Martell, director of player development for USA Hockey, told the New York Times. We're a late-developing sport. The best young kids aren't the best kids later on. Nobody knows who's really good until after puberty, end quote. But to that, I would say that's not the point of any of this. Like, he's saying, well, we don't know who's going to be good in 10 years. So what's the point of having these rankings? The rankings, to me, are really helpful. You get rid of the rankings, how are you scheduling? Team in Ashburn goes and plays tournament in Pittsburgh, right? You don't know who you're playing against and who you're not. If you're taking away the way that you do the schedule, aren't you possibly risking more embarrassment for the players? Because now we're just all feeding out of the same trough. It's all thrown into one pot. There's no real quantifiable way to determine who's better than who. Like, at least with these rankings, if you're the 59th team, you shouldn't be playing the 15th. You should probably be playing the 47th or the 61st team. And by getting rid of them, I think it's a big risk. But I guess my question to you, and I want to open up the phones, I think this could be a really, really interesting conversation for people with kids at the youth level, people who played youth sports. Like, do you think, just as a general idea, is this part of a solution? Is this beneficial? Is this a good idea, hockey or otherwise, to stop ranking, mm-hmm. quantifying as much as we can? 800-636-1067 to protect the kids at age 9, 10, 11, whatever it is.
I know how we got here, right? I know how we ended up in this place, and it wasn't malicious. It wasn't bad, right? So a kid gets drafted, goes to the major leagues one day, or a kid gets a college scholarship. Well, then you start a little bit earlier. The sophomore in high school goes to the showcase camp or gets to work with the best coach. Well, if a sophomore is going to do it, why wouldn't a freshman do it? Well, if a freshman is going to do it and he can project to be a good high school baseball player or football player, lacrosse player, tennis player, swimmer, whatever, why wouldn't an eighth grader do it? And so on down the line. And you hear the stories of the college coach at the seventh grade practice offering a kid all expenses to Kentucky when he graduates in 6 years, whatever it is, right? I know how we got here. I love that they're pulling back on this. I understand the principle, and what you just said makes a lot of sense to me. We're trying to do the best we can scheduling this thing, so the team that's 125 in the country playing the number two team might end up being a mismatch, and that's not good for anybody. I guess my point is eventually when we get into high school, when we get into the place where it's that much more competitive and not everybody gets to play and there are tryouts and people are told no and they're starters and nobody cares about your feelings the same way, let's rank. Let's not have the 1A schools going up against the 6A schools when it comes to, you know, a football game or basketball or whatever. Let's keep within our divisions. At the lower levels, the biggest problem that's going on right now in youth sports is specialization too early. And for every guy that makes it, again, I keep picking up baseball because it's what I know and what I'm involved in coaching ranks as well. For every guy that makes to the major leagues throwing 100, there are now 10, 15, 20 high school kids with Tommy John surgeries on their resumes before
trying
they even
to
make
add
varsity.
Two ticks of velocity, yeah. You were being overworked.
And it's insane. Everything's about lighting up the radar gun. The craft of pitching goes away. And guys, it's about hitting it as far as you possibly can. Everything else be damned. You know, you're losing something. Now, the guys that make it through that are better players than they've ever been.
But hold on. Come back to where we're at here.
I'm
talking about team rankings, because I agree, and everyone agrees, I would say, specific to the players. If you're ranking the top 1,000 10-year-olds in the country, like they do this now for baseball,
yeah.
for Perfect Game and all this stuff, where I could get on and I can look up the 2023 top 200 high schoolers or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and these are like juniors in high school. I get that.
Yep.
No one's saying you should be ranking youth hockey players, but from a team standpoint, I believe there is actual good that comes from this to avoid the very thing that you're saying it creates. First of all, I would say keep the 9-year-old off the website. I don't know a better way to say that.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Maybe they don't have to see it. Maybe you could have like a password that you need that the coach gives the parents to get access to the rankings. Maybe only the coaches get access to the rankings in the way of like a Max Preps. Mm-hmm. Used to be locked in a bunch of ways. Like, I'm a high school football player. I can't see everything I want to see unless I have access to it.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it that way if you wanted to. But I also think that there is part of this to me is, I don't think it's the end of the world if you know your team is bad. Like, I grew up, I never had a hitting coach. I never got to play on the, you know, I was on the all-star team one time as like a youth baseball player or whatever. Mm-hmm. But like that kind of thing, my parents didn't care enough about that. They were like, you're doing this for fun. We go there 3 days a week. I didn't even get to play All-Stars that year because it was like they're practicing 7 days a week, including Saturday and Sunday. My parents were like, that's outrageous. We're not doing that. Like, I'm not saying that's the right way to do it. I didn't care enough to put up a fight. But for my family, it was like different. My parents were not the guy that's like going crazy and get your elbow up and
mm-hmm.
we're going to go do 4 hours of lessons. Like, that was not a thing. And I guess
but it is now, I guess, is the point I'm making.
It was then, too, for certain parents.
For some.
But my whole point is, I knew I wasn't going to play in the big leagues. I knew I wasn't the best player. I knew my teams weren't that great. That was okay. It's no longer okay to, like, know that, I guess.
Yeah, that's where I'm going here, Grant, is this has become an industry. This has become a multi-billion-dollar youth sports machine that does. It's not slowing down. And anything we can do to slow it down, and that to me would include this specialization, because if you're on the number two hockey team in the state of Minnesota, that means some families spending tens of thousands of dollars in all likelihood and all the equipment and traveling
so
and this
much
and the
money,
other.
Bro.
For high school kids, yeah. At that time when it's serious, let's go. For a 10-year-old that hasn't gone through puberty yet, it's too much. The whole thing is too much. Anything
so do
you can
you
do
agree
to
with getting rid of the rankings?
Absolutely. Slow that cultural train down. Let kids be kids. They need to play other sports. They need to experience all the different things that growing up has to offer. You start ranking.
But so how do you know when you're doing the schedule for the 9 and 10-year-olds without the rankings? When you go to a tournament, so just as an example, I can click on like Pittsburgh, all these cities. If I take my team from the Ashburn Ice Rink or Fredericksburg Ice Rink or whatever,
right.
and we're going to do a tournament in Pittsburgh against some random team, there's no way to quantify who I'm playing against anymore if not for ranking teams and keeping all these things tabulated. So I could get worked 40-1.
Totally. My
That's
answer
worse
to that,
than being listed 27th
totally.
Instead of second.
My answer to that is the team from Ashburn doesn't, with 9 and 10-year-olds, doesn't need to be going to Pittsburgh for a tournament.
Well, I agree with that. But that's a whole different conversation.
But I think it's all feeding out of the same trough. I think we need to slow that down.
No one's disagreeing with you. At all. I mean, there might be a dad somewhere who's going, no, my guy's going to the NHL.
Right.
But I'm not trying to say it's like a straw man thing, but it kind of is. Like, yes, we all agree. So youth sports is out of control. But we're not putting the toothpaste back in the tube. So I guess in this hypothetical where they shouldn't be going to these tournaments, they shouldn't be traveling the country at 9 years old, they shouldn't be playing in California when they're from D.C., they should be having these games at the St. James and going out for ice cream after.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we are. This is where we're not. You're not a cop. This is now a thing. In this context, though, you're still saying get rid of the rankings.
Yeah.
And then my question would be, they're going to the tournament. How should we figure out who they can play and who they can't play if we can't keep the rankings?
Do the best you can based on previous results.
Phone call between coaches.
Yeah, seriously.
Something. But like, they're not keeping, like, the results are not anywhere public.
No, but like, hey, we played it. We have one team in common.
Yeah.
We beat them 10-0. Well, we lost 17-2. Maybe we shouldn't match up in the first round.
Right.
You know, or whatever.
I wonder, I mean, there's probably a lot of times where there's no common opponent.
Sure.
Right? Let's go to Kevin in Suitland. Kevin, you're on Grant and Danny. My hockey rankings, no longer going to do this. You're seeing this kind of thing in youth sports. Helpful or not?
I don't see it as being helpful. I'm a referee when it comes to volleyball, and I will tell you that I refereed 12-year-old female teams from Puerto Rico that came up to D.C. So they're traveling all over the country to do this. And the great thing is, let's say, for example, you have an 18-year-old division. There's at least three different groups that you can register for in that 18-year-old tier. So it's incumbent on the coaches and the parents and the directors to put them in the right division before they ever get to the tournament.
Appreciate you. Let's go to Andrew in Stafford on G&D. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, guys. Danny, 100% agree, except I'm fine with the team being ranked. I don't think any 9 or 10 or 11-year-old needs to have their name and their stats on the website.
Well, to my knowledge, that's not a thing, Andrew. No, nobody's ranking players. It's the question is they're ranking the teams. And they do it as much as anything else to help with scheduling so that you get fair matchups.
Then I misunderstood. I thought you guys were talking about individual rankings at that point. And
Well, they do that in baseball and stuff. Like, it's third-party sites. It's like Perfect Game and all this stuff are ranking, you know, the top 200 guys.
That's the ridiculous part of it. I mean, you know, the kid's going to grow a foot between when he's 10 and when he's 16.
Right.
Like, it's not even the same person at that point, the same kind of player. So individual rankings for prepubescent kids is not right and not helpful and bad for sports all around.
I can't imagine anyone would disagree with that, would they? I mean, because there's no – I don't know of any site, I don't know of any publication that's ranking kids as youths. I mean, it's already ridiculous when you get, like, the letter of intent for the middle schooler, that story that we get every couple of years.
Yeah, I think somebody's doing that. I was looking for it just now while you guys were talking. Like, I'm sure I've seen he's the number one seventh grader in the country type
you
things.
Think?
I'm sure I've seen that kind of stuff. Maybe it's tongue-in-cheek. Maybe it's, like, on Chappelle's show or something right. I saw, but I promise you I've seen that
stuff. Well, we'll dig during the break. If that's happening, that's outrageous. And for the record, I want to double down in case it sounded dismissive. Everything you said, I agree with.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my point is, there's a second conversation we could have, which is, are youth sports out of control? And I think that's a real quick segment.
Yeah.
Yep, they are. What's next?
Sure are. What else do you guys have?
But in terms of this, we're getting rid of the rankings that are used to kind of make sure that the games are fair and even. Because the teams that aren't ranked high, the players that are on the teams that aren't ranked high, we're protecting them, which I totally get. We should make an effort to do that. But is the juice worth the squeeze here? Does it help? That's the question. And my kids are really, really young. I mean, I got a 3-year-old girl and a 1-year-old boy. Your kids are playing youth sports.
Mm-hmm. Oldest is, yeah.
Not at this level, I would say.
No.
So this is where we can maybe tap into some people that are in the game. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got
you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Welcome back and thanks for listening to the show. We saw this story about a hockey site and organization that ranks hockey teams for youth tournaments all over the country, and they're no longer going to do it. They say it's bad for basically youth sports, that they're ranking these teams, and it's bad for the psyche, the mentality of the kids. And the people that are involved in this organization or teams, coaches, are saying, this is a great asset. Like, I need this to schedule. I need to know who I'm playing to make sure that I'm not taking my kids to go have a slaughter game with a slaughter rule where we get beat by 15 goals. Danny, you made a really good point about just bigger picture,
yep,
how out of control all this stuff is when you said that you could just not have the tournaments and you could not be taking your team four states over to play. But my point is that's already happening.
Sure, cat's out of the bag there.
That's one of those, like, let's just touch a button and do it this way. And like, yeah, that's a better way to do it. I don't think that's a real fix, and so we're drilling down on if this is helpful or not.
No, their language here is really instructive, right? And I think this is perfectly said by them. This is from My Hockey Rankings, the organization we're talking about. Unfortunately, the youth travel sports culture in our country has evolved into a money-making, high-pressure, and at times downright ruthless environment. Youth sports have become a rat race to the top amongst parents, coaches, and clubs. There is this, quote, if you aren't keeping up with the Joneses, do you even love your kid mentality out there? And I think that's essentially cutting to the core of this. Does this fix every problem, every ill? No, of course not. It doesn't put the genie back in the bottle, toothpaste back in the tube, whatever. But it's the right thing to do, in my opinion. It's a way to kind of ebb the tide, and I agree with the step.
All right, let's mow through some calls here, rapid fire. Be quick. Make your points, though. We want to hear from you guys. Jim's in Lexington Park on Grant and Danny. Hey, Jim.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey,
bud.
Love listening to you guys. I mean, when it comes to these rankings, I mean, when you're talking about travel leagues, I think, you know, the reason why people are upset is because, you know, in today's world, and I'm a father of two, you know, everybody wants their kid to be the best. You know, get rid of the rankings. I mean, I think the kids are going to learn a little bit more losing than winning all the time. Not every kid's going to make it to the NFL. Not every kid's going to make it to the major leagues. Mm-hmm. You know, so what's the point of these rankings?
Well, that's actually a really good point the other way, because I'm saying, almost need the rankings to make sure that you protect the kids from embarrassment. And he's going, so what, you get beat?
Yeah, that's why, like, my oldest son's in sports. He's there to learn that there's something bigger than just you special little snowflake. He's there to fail.
Totally.
Like, that's part of the point.
And that's true. I mean, there's something to be said for, you know, the 43rd best team in that age group shouldn't be playing the first, probably.
Right.
That doesn't do anybody any good,
uh-huh,
including the first best team. But, yeah, that's true. Like, so what if you get beat badly because you don't know better than to schedule that team?
Mm-hmm.
Alex is in Fairfax on the Fan. Hey, Alex.
Hey, fellas. So the problem with this, right, is that most parents are pushing their kids, and they're basically putting them in this little square, and they're like, this is the sport that you're going to do, and this is what you're going to do all year long. They're taking away the experience from the kids trying everything. Like, I played sports. I failed at some. I was really good at some. I coach baseball, so I see some of this. The travel, it's crazy. These kids are playing literally every single day, which that's where you're having injuries. That's where you're having all this stuff. So it takes away from the experience.
It is outrageous, and it's a good call. Thank you.
Thanks, bud.
The practice schedules of some of these teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not even talking about elite travel, like AAU type, that kind of stuff, select soccer when I was a kid. I would drive by when I would go home years ago to, like, just to see my family or whatever. And the youth football team, that's just the local Parks and Rec type youth team, would be practicing at like 7:30 at night for the, like, the Pee Wee football. It was like the fourth time that week or whatever. And it's like, what is the point of this? Now, maybe those kids are better at football than I was at that age. And to their credit, like, those kids are probably in high school now. And in my county, my teams are now going to the playoffs every year. Like, so they took it more seriously, I guess, and they probably got better at it. We didn't do that at all, and it's just hard for me to fathom that kind of schedule for kids. Chris is in the city. What's up, Chris?
Hey, fellas. So I grew up in D.C. playing youth hockey. I've got four boys. The older two are 7 and 6, and they just made the travel team over at MedStar. And I think one of the byproducts of what you guys are talking about is rankings and this emphasis on travel. It creates this culture where legitimacy and success are getting measured by the wrong metrics. So my boys are on a might travel team. I get hit with this list that not only are we going to be traveling and practicing all the time, they have to buy a branded hockey bag, a branded track suit, a blue helmet, blue pants. I mean, these kids are 7 to 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's all of this culture of sort of professionalism at the earliest ages where it's just completely unnecessary.
Your shirt and ties on the buses.
That is the way to put it. Seriously, the professionalization of amateurism. So to speak. That's what it is. The expectations are ridiculous. Yeah.
And just one more point the previous caller was making about the scheduling. You know, Grant, growing up, I played at Fort DuPont. My first 3 years, we lost every game by double digits. I think it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But these days, you know, you want to play in a tournament, you pick up the phone, you call, you talk it through. Here's what my team's like. Here's our basic ability. And you find the right fit. It's okay to stretch yourself, go to a tournament, get beat. That's a learning experience. But I don't know that it's as big an issue as you may think it is.
So you're saying you can kind of just figure it out, basically. And that makes some, like, you're probably right. I mean, when I was playing football as a freshman, our JV team was getting worked like 50-0 every week for like a month in a row. We had one kid, Jonathan Thigpen, who would run for like $1.73. We might score a touchdown, and then everyone else just got shoved around by dudes with mustaches. And we were like, oh my goodness, this is not fun. Guess what? I'm just sitting here
talking.
Yeah,
we're fine.
Everything's going to be okay. Peter in Arlington, what's good?
Hey guys. I have two quick points. One is that it was mentioned before how individual players aren't ranked, but in golf they are. You can go in and you can see what Charlie Woods is ranked among 11-year-olds in golf right now.
Really?
Yeah, like tennis they do it too, right?
Yeah, there's tennis. I mean, individual sports, they're ranking.
See,
they're
that's ranking crazy to me.
10,
like, that's unacceptable.
So that's one thing. My second part is kind of going back to just part of the bigger picture with youth sports. I think it's part of the reason why it seems like less and less kids are getting into sports because they're kind of turned off. Some kids who may get into it if it was less competitive and less, so cutthroat, less and less kids are getting into sports nowadays, I think, because of this culture around it.
I totally agree with that, by the way. Participation rates, I mean, that's what happens.
I'll sneak one more in. Last word on this goes to Brandon in Waldorf. Brandon, you're up.
What's going on, guys?
Hey, man.
I'm kind of in favor of the rankings a little bit. I understand, you know, you have to look out for the mentality and the sensitivity factor, but a lot of kids grow spoiled and somewhat privileged because they get participation trophies. You lose, you come back next week. It's just that simple. I mean, and if you put the work in, you put the work in. Let's keep the Raiders to keep the games fair. But at the same time, man, we can't coddle our kids. They got to grow up. You're not going to win all the time. So get used to it. That's the way life is.
But I think people on the other side are saying the same thing, even if they don't want the rank.
Yeah, I'm saying pretty much the same thing as you, right? I part of the experience is to lose. Part of the experience is to go through adversity. And nobody wants to deprive kids of that. But this idea that we're, you know, that you got to buy 700 pieces of gear, the right team bag, and we want to talk about privilege, think about the kids that can't do that. Where's their access? And all this is trying to do is level that same playing field.
Next, one of the Commanders joins us to go game by game through the schedule. We're going to find out some of the problem areas, where the team could have a lot of success, where they got to be nervous. Very, very candid. I'm surprised this guy's willing to do this. We'll do it next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.